After the invasion, Michael Makovsky, a member of the Pentagon's Iraq oil planning team under Fife, chaired weekly telephone conferences with American oil advisors in Baghdad. Late in the spring of 2003, Makovsky asked that inquiries be made at Iraq's oil ministry about the old pipeline's status. Was it operational? Could it be repaired or placed into service? The assignment fell to Gary Vogler, a West Point graduate and former Mobil Oil executive who had entered Baghdad with the first wave of American civilians as part of the oil advisory team led by Phil Carroll. Vogler considered himself to be politically naive. In the first weeks after the invasion, he established a strong working relationship with Iraq's interim oil minister, Thamir Ghadban, a career ministry engineer who had been jailed briefly by Saddam, but who had stayed and survived his reign. One day Vogler traveled to the oil ministry and found Ghadban at his desk, juggling telephones. Vogler asked about the pipeline to Haifa. Ghadban looked at him icily.
"There are a lot of people in my organization, in the ministry, and throughout the country, who feel like the only reason why you guys came into this country is to get oil out to Israel," he said. "If I go out with a question like that, I'm only going to solidify their viewpoint."
"Forget I asked you that," Vogler said. "Don't follow up on it unless I ask you again." The queries from Makovsky in Washington continued. Vogler resisted the questions, asking why Makovsky kept making such an issue of a pipeline that had never been discussed in pre-war planning. The purpose of the investigation seemed vague. "Put in writing what you need and why you need it," Vogler requested. In an interview years later, Makovsky said he could not recall discussing the pipeline with Vogler, but he did remember being asked to review the pipeline's status by superiors at the Pentagon. "The Israelis were at one point interested in this at the beginning of the war," he recalled. "I was asked by an official to look at this." He investigated and wrote a brief report. "There were a lot of things I looked into that didn't go anywhere. I'm not aware of anyone in the U.S. government who was advocating building a line from Iraq to Israel. I never advocated anything like that." Douglas Fife, too, said the idea surfaced with lower-level Pentagon officials and he never supported the proposal. Makovsky clashed regularly with Vogel. He felt that the former Mobil executive was unreliable. A third American official who participated in the pipeline discussions in 2003 and who respected both Vogler and Makovsky recalled that Makovsky's true purpose was to find an export route for Iraqi oil that would bypass Syria and benefit Jordan, not Israel. "Mike's view is that you can't have it go to Israel. He would like that, but he realizes you can't have that," this official recalled. Still, Makovsky was, in this participant's estimation, tone-deaf. "Why does he always have to refer to it as the Haifa pipeline?" Makovsky said in the interview that aiding Jordan and undermining Syria was indeed the reason he was at times animated about the possibility of resurrecting the pipeline. He continued for years afterward to write articles supporting a pipeline route from Iraq to Jordan, arguing that it would create an opportunity to export oil both to Asia, where demand is growing, and to Europe and the United States. Eventually, unhappily, Ghadban made the inquiries demanded by his American liaisons. He reported back with evident satisfaction that the pipeline in question barely existed anymore. It had not been maintained for decades and had been pulled apart in places by scavengers. There was nothing, realistically, that could be done for now. These awkward early exchanges coincided with high-level reviews of how Iraq's state-owned oil industry should be restructured to attract foreign investment and improve production rates. Philip Carroll, the Bush administration's initial senior oil advisor, was a patrician and a deeply experienced peer of Vice President Cheney's in the oil business. After running Shell's American division, he had been recruited to turn around troubled Fluor Corporation, a government contractor and Halliburton competitor. At the time of the Iraq invasion, Carroll held a top-secret security clearance from his Fluor days. He was a close social friend in Houston of George H.W. and Barbara Bush, the American president's parents. Carroll had reluctantly accepted a six-month Baghdad assignment at Rumsfeld's request. He considered it a call to national service that he could not refuse, Although it would cost him about $500,000 in foregone private sector compensation and require him to live in Spartan conditions in Iraq's green zone. Carroll waged a rear-guard battle in Baghdad against the Bush administration's more radical privatization advocates. He made clear that he would resign rather than participate in a precipitous sell-off of Iraq's oil assets, according to one career intelligence analyst who worked with him at the time. Carroll, too, was a believer in free markets, but he knew the Middle East, and he felt that the United States had no choice but to go slow and defer to Iraqi decision-making. Iraq's nationalism, coupled with the visible trends toward state ownership in the global oil industry, suggested that post-war Iraq should probably re-establish its state-owned oil company, at least as a first step. Carroll's personal view was that if he were running Iraq, and believe me, I never want to do that, he would build up a strong nationalized oil company and then later invite private international oil companies to invest as partners in Iraq's fields. That mixed model would free up Iraq's national revenue for crying needs in education, healthcare, and other social sectors. If you bring in Exxon with a very fat checkbook, they could basically throw money at something and get things done very quickly, Carroll said. Iraq would probably have to give up some oil ownership in exchange for such investment capital, but it would also gain access to the latest industry technologies and training. In any event, Carroll felt that he should not impose his private opinion on the interim Iraqi administration. He wanted to help Thamir Ghadban and the administration at least begin to be thinking about their options for reorganizing their country's oil industry. He advocated approaches that might favor private oil companies in the longer run, however. On June 26th, Carroll wrote a memo entitled Future Policy Issues Concerning the Ministry of Oil, addressed to Paul Bremer. He noted that raising Iraqi production to its full capacity of about 6 million barrels per day might require as much as $30 billion or more in long-term capital investments. This raised the question of when to invite new upstream discussions with prospective partners from the oil industry. Carroll wrote that the next 12 months would not be too early to start talks. He foresaw an extended period to exchange concepts and to establish relationships.